You've reached the Ace and Alex Detective Agency. I'm Ace.
And I'm Alex. And this is a podcast about anything.
So, Alex, this is our very first podcast. I have to admit, I have a little bit of nerves today.
Breaking your podcast virginity?
There's an image I never wanted to consider. But yes, I'm looking at the little red light, thinking about the people listening to us talk, and wonder if anyone will think we have anything interesting to say.
Interesting is subjective, but I'm hoping that maybe this will find its way to people that are like-minded, and we'll get what we're trying to say.
I agree with you completely. Should we introduce ourselves?
Sure, you go first.
I'm Ace.
And I'm Alex, and we are the Ace and Alex Detective Agency.
A podcast about anything. And when we say anything, we mean absolutely anything. Anything that sparks our interest.
Literally anything. Literally.
Which goes to point that we'll probably have an explicit censor.
That is a definite. There's going to be swearing.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be pets.
And nudity.
Thank God it's on the radio.
And thank God.
And there will be Adam Driver, I'm just saying.
I'm trying not to sigh loudly into the microphone.
It's a middle-aged crush.
We are two middle-aged women who met when we were 12, or were we 13?
Oh.
13.
Would it be 13? Well, we met grade 8.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what class we met in?
Science class.
Right. Do you remember
grade 8?
Yeah. Do you remember the teacher's name?
Mr. Rose.
Okay, the only reason that you know that is because I brought this up about 3 weeks ago.
Why would you tell our listeners that? Why? Why do you need to say that? Do you feel vindicated now?
I do, actually.
All right. I still don't remember where we sat. I think you're full of crap, basically.
Okay, so I've been through this in my mind. We sat together, we sat, as I remember it distinctly, front, left, with me on the end, you in the middle, Christina Carafell on the end. But then halfway through the year, I think you are correct, you specifically moved over to the right side, second table down.
That's how I remember it, was right side, second table down. Did you not come with me?
No, because didn't he switch us around? Like through after second semester, I think I remember that. And that's how you ended up moving.
I honestly don't recall. Because I remember I didn't like you.
I don't know why you had to bring that up. Here we are 30 years later. I think I probably grew on you.
A little bit, yes. But
maybe we're still in that transition phase.
Look at it this way. Every single person that I adore in my life, I didn't like when I met them. So what does that say about me?
That you're awful?
Exactly. I have to admit, I have been very judgmental throughout my years.
Okay, just to take a hard pause on this, did you really not like your partner before you married him? Like when you met him?
No, I didn't.
What?
You have to realize, I, at that point, was only just starting to think about having a serious relationship with someone.
Yeah, you weren't like me who wanted to get married at 12.
No, I was not. And he had kids, rode a motorcycle, smoked, and had tattoos. I was very much into the white collar, prim and proper, well established men.
Which is so funny looking back now, thinking about it. There, I can't even picture you with that.
No.
Like I know that you were like wanting to be an accountant and you wanted to be with an accountant. And the thought of that now, just, it's so foreign to me. There's no way I can see it.
It makes you realize how going through life, you have these cycles almost, right? Where you have your prepubescent years, you know, after you get through toddlerhood and et cetera, et cetera. And then you have your puberty years and your teen years and your early 20s and then your late 20s and your 30s. I think almost when you start to reach your mid 30s, you really start to form who you really are. It seemed to take a really long time to, not to sound cliche, but really find myself.
Mm-hmm. Don't you find though, now that we're into our 40s, like you're still learning stuff about yourself? I don't know. For me, I am definitely.
Yes, absolutely. I think I'm way more open-minded, but I also don't have a lot of time or interest in, for lack of a better phrase, bullshit.
Oh, completely. And that's the great thing I think about getting older is like, you're sort of like getting more into like who you are and realizing what is and what isn't worth your time. And, but don't have to apologize for saying, nah, this doesn't suit me. Fuck off.
Yeah, exactly. There's that explicit symbol.
Exactly. It will be earned, let me tell you.
But I agree with you completely. There seems to be this, you know, the errors that people have on how they want other people to perceive them. And I had them as well. And I know you did as well.
Mm-hmm.
And there comes a point where you go, why does this matter? And it really doesn't at all.
Mm-hmm.
I think if I hadn't ended up with, well, I shouldn't say ended up falling in love with my husband, I might have gone a different way. He's definitely opened my eyes a lot to it because he is completely different. Than I expected. It showed me very much that I judged a book by its cover.
Mm-hmm. He's the perfect guy for you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, as much as he challenges me and drives me crazy, I think I'd be bored with someone who didn't.
That's so true. Then there's people like me that sort of got married very, very early on. I was like really young when I got married. Married for 16 years, got divorced, you know, now onto a second long-term relationship. And
well, that's because you're currently with a guy that is exactly like I am.
Okay, you don't need to mention that every time we talk to people. Ace seems to believe that I married the male version of her. And I have to say, when you look at it, yes, they're both gingers and they have the exact same hands.
Slightly creepy. It's creepy.
But I'm not saying that I tried to marry you. My psychologist might, but I won't say that.
Freud will have something to say about that, I'm sure.
I'm sure. 100%.
It's interesting, though, looking back. Like, I remember... being a teenager standing in Shoppers Drug Mart.
I know where you're going with this.
Yeah. And Shoppers Drug Mart is a pharmacy up here, but there's a magazine rack and me being bored out of my mind as you and some of our other friends, girlfriends, are grabbing bridal magazines and looking through them. We were definitely... of two different minds?
Well, I don't actually think that's true. Like, I love romance. I love, you know, and the thought, it wasn't so much the thought of getting married. It was the thought of the romance of it all that I got lost in. And like the bridal magazine was sort of the conduit, like the whole, if I'm one thing, I am a dreamer. I daydream constantly all day. And I think it just sort of fed into that, you know, mystical love and romance and belonging and, you know, that sort of stuff. I'm still like that. I still look at bridal magazines, even though even though I've said that I don't ever want to get married again, which is no slight against my partner. But when you've been there, done that, and you're kind of like coming out the other side of it, you kind of realize what's really important in a relationship. It's the commitment. It's not the piece of paper, which
yes.
I never thought I would say early on, but now I truly believe that. I mean, I don't want to like sort of dismiss what marriage really means,
Yes.
But
do you not find that in today's age? And I agree with you. It's an institution and it means a lot to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly means a lot to me now. My marriage is very important to me.
Yeah.
But it seems, I almost think they need to make it as difficult to get married as they do to get divorced.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. And that's the thing is, we have a mutual friend that's had multiple marriages.
Mm-hmm.
And that just blows my mind. Like, yeah. Once was enough for me. And mm-hmm.
That's like my mother. She's been with her current common-law husband, for lack of a better term. She's been with him for 28 years. No, 35 years now.
Wow.
And, you know, they're still not married. Like under the eyes of the law, they are. Mm-hmm. I mean, tax-wise, they are. Everything they are. Except they've never stood in front of, you know, the government and signed a piece of paper for it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I loved being married, to be completely mm-hmm. honest. We had a fantastic marriage until it wasn't. Mm-hmm. I absolutely adored my husband until I didn't. It mm-hmm. was really painful at the end. There was a lot of things that happened, both internal in our marriage and both and externally, one of which was my mother had passed away. And that was really hard on us. So, you know, it's not that I don't think, you know, marriage is important, but, you know, that lasting bond is the thing that to me is like the most beautiful. Did I tell you that I have my final for my my cults and terrorism class is due in 3 days and I haven't started writing it?
What sounds like typical Alex?
No, it's not. I've actually done really... No. Like, we've talked about this before.
Your 2,000-page essay that you had to do, when did you finish it compared to the due date?
The day before.
Yeah.
But like most people do. I mean, the thing is, it's not like I haven't done anything towards it, like all my other papers, which just by the by, I ended up with a 97% average in the class. So thank you very much.
Oh, I know. You work well under pressure.
Yeah. But that's my thing is that's become a crux. Like,
yeah,
it's I'm like, oh, well, I know I can do it really well. And, but then I'm like, I'm not sleeping right now because I know
you're thinking about it.
Yes.
And you have to, it's not like COVID has made it that you don't have to work. You just get to sit at home and work and think about, well, I could be doing my schooling, but there's all this work.
Right. And at this very moment, I actually have 4 classes, which I'm not sure why I was thinking that was a great idea to do. But
well, you didn't count on an election.
No, that's very true.
Elections so, speed up or well, intensify your workload.
Yes, 100%. Yeah. One class is ending tomorrow. That's the mm-hmm. one that I got the 97%, my criminal psych class. Part one, I have to do part two. I'm in forensics right now, forensic psychology, which is going pretty well. My cults and terrorism, I have another week and a half when with my big assignment due. And then I started Principles of Psych a week ago. And to be completely honest, I think I'm actually going to just postpone that one just for a little bit. Just I'm like really overwhelmed right now because
yeah.
they're all very writing intensive.
Yeah. And
which
you only
I really
have so much time.
And I really enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
But like I'm not giving anything like proper care, I don't think. Like I really need to like get into the research and getting to a writing flow, which I just can't do with work. And now with this, which let's be honest, I'm actually really enjoying this. So I would rather be doing this than writing a paper.
I would as well, but who knows what will come of it.
Well, you have different writing going on though. Slightly more enjoyable writing.
Yes. Yeah. purely fiction.
Which has got its own stressors with that anyway.
Especially when you have a family.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
You know, I love this quote that I heard years ago about how we are so distracted in our lives. And when we get into, because they've actually shown now that when you're really in the zone, right? I mean, people can't see, but I'm using quotations.
Finger quotes.
You got it. When you're in that zone, they actually show now that your brainwaves actually change, right? You are in a purely different state. It's a different state of being. And then we get distracted by our phones or our, you know, smartwatches. And in our case, our pets, our children, our husbands. And it pulls you out of that. That would, I would say, would be my stressor when it comes to writing, because I'm literally in a completely different world. I can see the room. I know what the characters are feeling and thinking. And then all of a sudden it's, have you seen my belt?
For sure.
You know, and it's like, it pulls you right out. And what this individual was saying in their quote was that you will never know what you were going to create in that moment, because that moment is gone.
That's slightly depressing. And that's, it's very really true. Depressing to think about.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting though. I mean, the point of the quote was to tell people to turn their damn phones off, right? That's what they were, you know, specifically talking about. But I found it interesting, and I find that, you know, when those types of moments happen in our lives, it's, you know, my dog's begging to go for a walk, or, you know, the mail lady knocks on the door. It's like, it really is this moment of, oh my God, just leave me alone.
It's really.
Yeah. And I'm sure you find that trying to do your work or your essays, et cetera, et cetera.
It's, you know, because my space is very limited. So everything is sort of out in the open. Like, I don't really have a space. So I'm sitting there and I've got my work computer and I've got my school computer and, you know, in the living room, and my daughter's got her desk with her computer for school and her books and stuff. So I've got sort of like my little area, and I'm like, you know, my partner's trying to like watch a show and she's doing homework, and there's the dog and then there's the cat. And I'm like trying to, you know, figure out the psychology of a serial killer or whatever, you know, and that's the thing, is you just want to get lost in your thought, but you can't.
I was off topic. I was sitting on the pooper, because we all know I no longer have Facebook, and I was watching a YouTube video.
I don't even know why magazines or newspapers are still in print, because really that they were basically for the bathroom. And yeah, and everyone just has a phone, which really is kind of disgusting unless you have like a Lysol wipe with you everywhere. I was thinking
that too, actually, how many germs must be on a phone. Anyways, I was watching this creepiest things that have ever been on TV kind of thing.
Oh.
And did you know that there was a serial killer? I think
you've piqued my interest.
I know. I think it was called Rodney Alcala. I'm probably pronouncing it wrong. It's A-L-C-A-L-A. He was actually on a television show. I think it was called The Dating Game at the time.
Oh.
And he actually got chosen by the woman.
Oh, gosh.
No, I'm serious.
Was she a victim?
No.
Did she end up being one of the victims?
That's where I thought it was going to go. But apparently, she, after meeting him, decided not to go on the date because she found him creepy.
And
I know.
Talk about listening to your gut, hey?
I know. I found it really interesting, and I started looking into him. But what it made me realize too is like, he was already a convicted sex offender when he got on the show. But it made me realize they literally brought anybody on that show. Oh, you're good looking and you speak well and blah, blah, blah.
Okay, was he attractive? Sure.
For the day. I mean, he looked like, you know, a 70s porn star, you know, comparison.
Some people are into that look, you know.
I think
just saying.
Most people were back there, but
did he have the big mustache?
Yes, he did.
Oh my Lord.
Yeah.
So, you know what's funny is how many serial killers are actually attractive. I think that's part of like why they can get away with it, mm-hmm. to be completely honest. Like mm-hmm. Bernardo, Dahmer was kind of attractive. Well, he was kind of attractive.
Wasn't Ted Bundy good looking? Yeah, he was.
Ted Bundy was really attractive.
Yeah.
Poor Zac Efron looked so much like him, got to play him in the Netflix show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's scary. You know what kind of hit me since we're talking about this topic is, and I've heard it a couple times and I can't be specific, but is like, even in the Silence of the Lambs is a good explanation of it. And I've heard it from, I don't remember what documentary, a serial killer actually said this, is we have an instinct not to be rude. So,
yeah.
You know, it's like the scene, like I was saying, in Silence of the Lambs, where he's got a broken arm and he's struggling with the couch and he, you know, asks her for help. And, you know, the common courtesy is, of course, to help. And as a woman, it's amazing that is extremely dangerous. You think about that moment and you're looking, like, keep using that example. I mean, I know it was a movie, but of you watching this guy struggle with this couch put in the back of a van and, you know, and he's like, do you mind helping? What are you going to say? No, I'm not helping. Do you know what I mean? Like, what would you do?
It's completely true. But that's part of like, in doing like some of the psychology classes, like that's a common thing is that they'll, it's kind of not really the same thing, but when Gary Ridgway, the Green River Killer, mm-hmm. is when he would go and pick up prostitutes, he would like leave a bunch of his son's toys in the car and like show pictures of his son, like, oh, look, I'm a normal guy. I just am not getting my needs met. And like, let's go somewhere and talk. And I'm just going to bludgeon you to death. Actually, he never bludgeoned it. He strangled everybody with.
Yeah. But it's that same type of thing, right? Like you get this false sense of
security.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and I know I've seen, I don't know if it was reality or fiction, but, you know, same type of thing with the guy on the side of the road and needing assistance or, you know, can I get directions? You know, those types of things. We have this natural need to be polite. How we will ignore the little voice in the back of our head, the gut feeling that we've all had that says, you know, maybe this person isn't who they seem to be. It really comes back to how we were raised and the person that we are. And I guess it says a lot about humanity that, you know, we want to inherently help each other, even if it puts ourselves at risk. It's just a shame that there are these monsters in the world that prey on us, knowing that trait. That's it for this week. Thanks for listening to the Ace and Alex Detective Agency. Next week, we'll talk about the year 1986.
Or maybe we'll talk about big, loud, lifted trucks. What's the deal with that? If you want to find out more information about us or our podcast, you can go to our website, www.theaceandalexpodcast.com,
or on Twitter at @AceAlexPodcast.